right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 50 degrees and very overcast here in upstate New York. We had the first round of fronts come through yesterday. It was beautiful. It was mid-60s. Felt like just about the end of spring, beginning of summer. It was really nice. But, yeah, we had pouring rain then in the late afternoon and then some brutal winds. And now it's kind of cool and very dark out and soon to be some snow. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, we titled the show Biosensor Implants, Diagnostics, AI, and Musk's $1 billion. And we talked about a lot of interesting things. If you did not catch the show, I recommend you catch it. It was a pretty good one. We talked about some pretty sick biosensing gear that's coming out. One happens to be not only implantable, but it connects via Bluetooth to your cell phone to send your doctor statistics. No longer fantasy. It has become a reality, and they are already testing these in people. So look out. Should be lots of fun. And of course, we ended it with Elon Musk dedicating $1 billion to a new organization called OpenAI, I believe. And pretty much what they are going to do is try to keep artificial intelligence for the good of all, as opposed to for the destruction of the human race, which is pretty much, if we don't get a handle on it, and I mean, it's just not me up here yet, but now you guys have heard more than enough of even the people who are a lot more in the know than me turning around and pointing, going, hey, we got to stop this truck, put some rules into place, and maybe slow things down a little bit before we end up going somewhere where we didn't mean to go, and now it is no longer controllable. And that is the big concern. So what I wanted to talk about today, we were a couple days ago, we looked at how they had just crossed that barrier between reality and fantasy, where virtual reality is now at a point where you cannot tell it apart. It's kind of like the Turing test for reality as opposed to intelligence. And with the coming of some of the VR products that are getting ready to roll out here to the general public, and right now we've had the kids all gaming, but just wait. I just saw something a couple days ago where they are touting this new solution for engineers working together across the globe, where they can put on their VR goggles and they can use holographic images. We just saw a story a couple weeks back where they now have touchable holograms. So they're going to have these holographic touchable images, and all of your engineers are going to have their 3D goggles on, standing in their own separate locations, yet all working together collaboratively on this project, 3D touchable project. And I mean, they can make it bigger, make it smaller, they can all talk, and they can all see everything in 3D. It's pretty amazingly incredible. I mean, even 10 years ago, something like that was not even thought to be possible in any type of near future. And like I said, people, it's exponential. Before, one of the big holdups for our science fiction future were the computer speeds, right? We had reached a point where, you know, we had all these things we wanted to do, but we just didn't have the CPU power and the memory. And now, I mean, our desktops are extremely powerful, a lot more powerful than they had been even just a year ago or two. But imagine what the cloud is now. I mean, with that cloud computing, and if you really understood like how cloud works, where you're load balancing over thousands of machines. I used to build resilient networks, nothing as big as Google, but I mean, I totally understand how it works. And you're load balancing. All these machines are tied together with heartbeat links. And they all work in tandem. So you know, it's a supercomputer that is a bunch of connected supercomputers. And the great part is when it's distributed, it doesn't all have to be in the same room even. So long as you have a high-speed backbone link between your, they call them POPs, your points of presence, it doesn't matter. They don't need to be in the same room. I mean, obviously, you're going to want to do redundancy on those links. So if you have a cable get cut or something go down, you have a second way for the traffic to travel. But it allows them to have data centers in different countries even. So a big company like Google could have a data center in, who knows where? I have no idea even where they are. I know they have one in California. So let's say they have one in California or Seattle, maybe. Washington. But let's say we have one in Washington, one in California, one in, I don't know, someplace flat in the middle of nowhere, Iowa. So, you know. And so for the U.S., those could be their three main data centers. They all have high-speed connections between one another, coming from multiple points and probably multiple providers as well. So if one provider goes down, you still got a backup because you always want to make sure you can't go down unless it's like some apocalyptic thing that happens. And even then you could probably build some resiliency in until the power goes out. But you can not only build multiple data centers, but they're all going to be now helping each other when, let's say, one area of the country is busier than another. Let's say we got a lot of traffic going on in Washington right now and your servers are slowing down a little bit. Well, it doesn't matter because now you can start using the CPU power from the computers in Iowa. All right, I really didn't want to get into a cloud computing discussion. But the great thing about it is that you will no longer need to be able to support all the end user hardware that we used to have to support on this side of things. Now that apps and everything else are going up into the cloud, it's going to take care of that. And disruptive technologies for sure. We spent 2 whole days talking about disruptive technologies of the future. Everything that is coming just about in the future is disruptive. It's going to take the world that we used to know and flip it right on its head. And I mean, Nana's going to be so confused. It's really not even funny. All right. So anyway, Elon Musk dumped $1 billion into trying to protect Earth from evil artificial intelligence with his open AI project. And he's got all kinds of different people working with him, including Peter Thiel and Netflix's CEO, Reed Hastings. I want to change subjects a little bit. I'll take 5 degrees off to the left. And I wanted to look at some digital video stuff that has been coming out over the last couple weeks that I've caught 3 different stories, all different technologies, all very disturbing. So, you know, if some of the other stuff we haven't talked about that we've talked about hasn't given you nightmares, well, let's try this one on for size. Digital puppets mimic celebrities with chilling accuracy. Now, the reason why I bring this up and the reason why I was talking about virtual reality is because right now, virtual reality is working on becoming the next big thing. They want the computing world to become immersible. And remember, we've talked about the little baby steps that we've taken since the early days. I would say even with the radio, like back when my mom or even my grandfather were young and they used to all gather around the radio on Sunday night and sit around and listen to Orson Welles, you know, to War of the Worlds or whatever, but they'd be sucked into the machine. Well, it happened with TV, it happened with PCs, it happened with mobile devices. Now it's going to happen with VR. And this is going to be your first step into Tron. You know, if you remember the movie from the 80s, Tron, he got sucked into the video game. And this is it, man. You know, Xboxes and PlayStations and I don't know, whichever ones had. I know Xboxes had the 3D goggles, but there was another one with the 3D goggles also. I mean, that was just the first step to test and to see how people reacted to it. But now they're going to roll it out to the mainstream. But the scary thing is with artificial intelligence and the fact that these computers are so fast, they've been able now to create virtual realities that are indistinguishable from the real reality. And that's where the big concern is, guys, because someday they might just be able to pull a slick willy and we all just find ourselves in this alter reality somehow once they get something, you know, some sort of integration chip into us or some sort of augmentation chip. And they've been talking about that augmented reality, the implants of the future. So check this out. I've seen a few science fiction movies where it ends up at the end, like the president has all been AI and all of his speeches and stuff that he'd been giving had just been this whole fabricated reality. Well, that's not too far away. This story, digital puppets mimic celebrities with chilling accuracy, has a picture of Tom Hanks, and it was scanned off of the internet. And from the scan of Tom Hanks' face off of the internet, they've been able to create a 3D model of Tom Hanks' face that, by the way, looks a lot like Tom Hanks. And, well, let's read this. Digital puppets mimic celebrities with chilling accuracy. No job, it seems, is safe from the machines. And we're going to get to that. And that includes actors. Computer researchers from the University of Washington combed the internet to gather vast photo collections of celebrities' faces, and then they built 3D digital imitations of their likenesses. The resulting digital puppets not only looked the part, they also conveyed the facial expressions and mannerisms of their real-world counterparts with chilling accuracy. And in this strange new world, the team created former President George W. Bush, and he controlled then all of the digital puppets of other well-known celebrities, including Barack Obama, to make it look like they gave an interview they never did. Now, what? That sounded really convoluted, but basically, we have George Bush Jr. off to the left, and then we have nine quote-unquote celebrities off to the right. Shinzo Abe, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Neil Patrick Harris, Daniel Craig, Hillary Clinton, Ian McClellan, Barack Obama, Piers Morgan, and Tom Hanks are all off to the side. When I hit the play button for this video, and it's only 24 seconds, but George Bush, in a real picture, is giving an interview. Now, I had seen this technology back a few months ago, but it was only in a lab, but now they're showing some real testing. George Bush is off to the left, and he's answering questions. He's making these facial expressions. He's talking. His head is moving. You know how he talks and how he tilts his head to the side when he's talking, like he's not seeing the world straight. So George Bush and all of his mannerisms are off to the left. And then all of those faces, those 3D modeled, replicated faces that they constructed from images on the internet, they are replicating exactly what George Bush is doing. Now, I just dropped the video into chat because there's no audio. I can't play it for you, but I want you to watch it. Talk about frightening. I mean, just imagine all the video and stuff that we do. Now, I tend to not do video, but there's a lot of people out there that are doing Skype video and doing this, that, and the other, doing YouTube videos and showing the world what they look like so they'll be easy for the 230-point facial recognition cameras to find them someday. But if you take a look at how that works, you're going to see that it looks pretty damn realistic. And someday, you know, in the days of video phone, someday, could you imagine, like, your mom or your husband or wife calls you and, oh, honey, pick up toilet paper at the grocery store. But maybe it's not them. You know, like real Tom Cruise, what was it called? Mission Impossible, type stuff. And that's frightening. You know, and there were stories back 9/11 when the planes went down. Do you remember? There were investigators that had shown that those voices of people calling their spouses as the plane was going down in Pennsylvania, I think it was, right? Isn't that where that plane went down? That could have been faked. They could just put anybody's voice through like a voice changer thing and get the modulation correct. I mean, they could have been recording the phone calls. They get your exact voice modulation. Remember, those are all biometrics. All of these things that we do individually that are telltale characteristics of us are biometrics, and they're collecting all of those. And as they collect more and more and they get you down to a T, anything goes. You could end up, and you just wait and see with some of this new VR stuff. You wait and see. Remember when the Wii first came out and it was so cute? You could have a little me. And it kind of looked like you could set the hair color and put glasses on it and whatever. Become goth Jewel and then pop Jewel. No, it was fun. We all made little me's here. But guess what? The little me is growing up and is going to turn into some sort of scary virtual 3D representation of yourself that they can make say and do things. I don't think I'm liking that at all. So basically, in that video, they can take anyone who's the puppeteer. In this case, it was George Bush for the demonstration. But hey, you could have some CIA dude being the puppeteer, an NSA, MI6, whatever, saying what they want to say. And then they have a 3D representation of you on the video screen saying that and doing that. And it's broadcasting to somebody else, and they believe it, that it's you, because, wow, it looks just like you. I don't know. I don't like this at all. I don't know why they would even create this. Why would you want digital puppets? And they're saying, yeah, it's for Hollywood. So what? Now Tom Hanks could be a 3D puppet electronic representation, and he can go sit in the Bahamas with his feet up drinking a martini? I mean, this is insane. Says pictures are worth more than 1,000 words. What is this technology? What would it really be useful for, except for trying to deceive people? The team's demonstration is the latest advancement in a 5-year effort to improve 3D facial reconstruction, tracking, and texture modeling. The team, led by Ira Kemmelmacher Schlitzerman. Oh, no comment. Combined Google images and machine learning algorithms to recreate faces and expressions without actually scanning a real person's face. So all they did was they took pictures they found on the internet. To do this, researchers searched the web and gathered at least 200 photos of celebrities donning various expressions and poses, just like all the narcissists on Facebook with 10,000 pictures of yourself. Yeah, you'll be ready. They got that face software where they've been tagging them for years. Nice big fat database to make you say anything they want. Machine learning algorithms mapped 49 facial anchoring points. And remember, they're really good at that now because they're able to diagnose road rage by your facial recognition in the car. Machine learning algorithms mapped 49 facial anchoring points, the corners of the eyes, mouth, and nose, for example, to assemble a 3D model of, say, Tom Hanks's face with a standard expression. Then algorithms overlaid Tom Hanks's various expressions over the standard model to capture the way his face changed as he smiled or frowned. The result was a digital model that was the spitting image of Tom Hanks and one that could also capture the subtle eye wrinkles and mouth creases of the actor's smile. And to even take it a step further, researchers then used YouTube videos of another person talking to drive the digital puppets. Although, say, Daniel Craig was doing the talking and the smiling in a YouTube video, Hanks's digital puppet conveyed the same facial expressions and mannerisms, but with a uniquely Tom Hanks twist. Now, guys, I'm telling you, this, what else could this be used for but deception? So, all right, under the guise of we're going to be able to make movies now without the actors, if that's where this, I guess, this great invention they're thinking is going to be used. Think about all the evil that can be done with this. So now you can impersonate somebody digitally and you can make them say anything you want them to say and it'll look just like them. They know they didn't say where they got the voices from, and maybe they're still working on that because none of this had voices. It just had movements. But you could say what you wanted them to say. I mean, hey, once they figure out, and we said that they already did apparently in some of the research for 9/11, where they think that they took the waveforms and they duplicated them, because that can already be done. But they can make people then say what they want them to say and look like it's the person saying it. There's not going to be any good here. This will be science fiction future of potential leaders. You know, they don't need to be up on a stage. They could have their avatar, their 3D avatar up there. And I don't know, they could be telling us that the president was behind the avatar, but it's safer that way because, oh, no assassins, right? We don't have to now pay all that Secret Service to protect him, because he could be in the safety of his own little locked vault giving his speech. And then the 3D rendered holographic image that you see, or wherever it is going to be a representation. But we're going to have to believe that it actually is that person that's the puppeteer. All right, anyway. Researchers will present their study at the International Conference on Computer Vision in Chile later this month. Right now, you need a lot of photos spanning a variety of facial expressions and lighting scenarios to create a 3D model with accuracy of the photogenic Tom Hanks. However, the researchers envision a day when people will use their technology to interact with 3D digital personas lifted from your family albums or historic photo collections. And for example, in the future, we might be able to put on a pair of VR goggles, ding, da, da, ding, and enjoy computer simulated coffee with an interactive model of a loved one who is 1,000 miles away, or we will finally get that opportunity to converse with a virtual Albert Einstein. Now, I hate to tell you, but the future is now, because I don't need to put on a pair of VR goggles and enjoy a cup of, I don't have to have simulated computer coffee. I can have real coffee and do video Skype with my cousin that's 17,000 miles away. Not a problem. I don't need this technology in order to do that right now. So, I don't know, guys. I don't like this one bit. Deception. Deception. You know, they're hoping that people are like, oh, look how cool that is. No, it's all about deception. This is the merging of reality with fantasy, people. Now they're going to make real-time avatars you can interact with that can talk and do all kinds of things like real people, and we'll be able to manipulate and control them. There's a story in chat. It's very scary. All right, but that wasn't the only story. There were three, I told you. Check this one out. If it loads. All right. Again, all in the name of Hollywood. Yes, we always knew Hollywood was in there pushing the agenda. There's a new product called Face Director. Face Director software generates desired performances in post-production, avoiding reshoots. Yes. It now will allow a director, and yes, my sister was in film. I worked on a feature-length film. If anyone ever asks you if you want to work on a movie, say, fuck no. It is one of the most miserable, horrible, awful things you will ever do. Meet cool people, but it was awful. But you'll find out working on a movie that there are probably 37 takes for each minute and a half of movie that you watch in the end edit. And once the film is all shot and you have all these different outtakes, somebody needs to go through and not only pick which were the best scenes, but then, you know, they do have digital editing. In the old days, it used to be I think they were called a Nagra. It was a table, an editing table, and they literally would use tape and a razor blade, and you would cut the cellulose where you wanted it. Part of it would fall onto the floor, and then you tape it together, and there you go. That's your edit. But now they have stuff like, I don't even remember the software. I had the whole suite way back. Manufacturer gave it to us. It was like $1,000 suite. And, of course, they wanted to sell it. Adobe, I think it's Adobe After Effects, maybe. It's one of those. But it's the whole big suite, and it's got all the editing software that you'd ever need. And it's actually, unless you're going with Industrial Lights and Magic or, you know, some other big editing house that's going to cost you bazillions of dollars to do special effects in that, if you're going to be doing your own editing or have, like, a standard editor, they're probably going to be using one of the professional editing packages. But you still, in that editing package, and I don't know, I haven't messed with anything high-tech like that in probably 15 years, like doing high-end video editing, which at that point we didn't even have enough power really to do anything like that. But back then you really couldn't morph facial expressions or anything. You were stuck with what was on the film. The good thing about digital editing was that you didn't lose the B-reel. You didn't lose the outtakes onto the cutting room floor. They still were in the original footage that then could be used for something else. You know, they could cut it up again and make a different version of the movie or whatever. All the cuts are done digitally. It's all digitized first and then mixed and matched. But check this out. And then after all of that, a lot of times the director still never has the shot that they wanted. After the editing happens and whatever, they still don't have the expression that they wanted to get on Johnny's face. So now they got to go back a year and a half after the fact, get the continuity director's notes, try and figure out exactly where everything is and make it look exactly the same in the background so we could take another shot, get the actor's hair exactly the same. Like, it's really hard to go back and reshoot after it's all been done because nothing looks the same. I'm sure you've all seen a movie where all of a sudden, like, the background changes for a second. Boop! Or something looks totally different. It's because they had to do a reshoot. And some people are more meticulous than others. But anyway, so this new software, what this is all for, is they won't have to do any of that anymore. So check this out. Some film directors are famous for demanding that scenes be shot and reshot repeatedly until actors express just the right emotion at the right time. And it doesn't happen sometimes. I mean, you just can't get it, especially if you've been shooting for 12 hours and all you want is to go lay down. And that happens. You're all hungry and you're cold. And it's like, Jesus, I want to be done. It's miserable. Don't ever shoot a movie. So until actors express just the right emotion at the right time, but now directors will be able to fine tune performances in post-production rather than on the film set with a new system developed by, Disney Research and the University of Surrey. I think that's in England. I'm not sure. I didn't look them up. Called Face Director, the system enables a director to seamlessly blend facial images from a few video takes to achieve the desired effect. So kind of a little bit like what they were doing the other one, where they were taking all these different facial expressions that they found on the internet, let's say. This one, these are all the facial expressions that they shot for this one scene. They blended them all together, so she has all these different emotions, and then they got the desired effect, and they show like how they synchronize all these from all these different facial expressions. Let me see, copy link. I can drop this in the chat. I'll put all this into the notes so you can see these, but it's pretty amazing. And so the scary fact of the matter is, even our emotions, like, they're going to start judging us with the surveillance that's everywhere. They're going to be able to start determining whether we are a danger to ourselves or others when we drive a car by our facial expressions. But, and biometrics, remember. I mean, there's going to be lots of biometrics being used instead of passwords. So your look, your, you know, whatever. As they perfect these quote-unquote fake reality tools that fool our vision into things, seeing things that really weren't there originally, and it's not even fooling it. I mean, it's actually recreating it, making it look very realistic. All it can be used for is deception. I mean, this is just so frightening. So frightening. Called Face Director, the system enables the director to seamlessly blend facial images from a couple of video takes to achieve the desired effect. It is not unheard of for a director to reshoot a crucial scene dozens of times, even 100 times or more, until satisfied. And I can attest to that, says Mark Gross, Vice President of Research at Disney Research. And trust me, don't go on a film shoot. You will be so, I mean, it is pretty cool just watching the equipment and everything. And especially if there's some famous people around, then it's super cool. But I'm telling you, it's so fucking miserable. 100 times for the same 3-minute scene that the actor now can't get right over the last 10 times because they're tired and cold. And the director insists they keep doing it until it's perfect. I mean, you want to start like hurting people. Anyway, back to the story. So this Marcus Gross, Vice President of Research at Disney Research, continues. He says that not only takes a lot of time, and that's shooting a scene 100 or more times, but it also can be quite expensive. And now our research team has shown that a director can exert control over an actor's performance, ding, 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 after the shoot with just a few takes, saving both time and money. Well, phew. Thank goodness for that. Interesting, it's Disney too. Jean-Charles Bazin, associate research scientist at Disney Research, and Charles Malleson, a PhD student at the University of Surrey Center for Vision, Speech, and Signal Processing, showed that Face Director is able to create a variety of novel, visually plausible versions of performances of actors in close-up and mid-range shots. And moreover, the system works with normal 2D video input acquired by standard cameras without the need for additional hardware or 3D facial reconstruction. The researchers will be presenting their findings at the ICV 2015, the International Conference on Computer Vision, December 11th through 18th in Santiago, Chile. Wait, so both of these products are presenting, when is this? When is it? December 11th through 18th. Hey, it's going on right now. The central challenge for combining the actors' performances from separate takes is video synchronization. But the differences in head pose, emotion, expression intensity, as well as pitch attenuation, and even the wording of the speech are just a few of the many difficulties in syncing video takes. I lost where I was. Basil Malleson and the rest of the team solved this problem by developing an automatic means of analyzing both facial expressions and audio cues. It then identifies the frames that correspond between the takes using a graph-based framework. To the best of our knowledge, our work is the first. So we were just asking in that last story, oh, are they going to combine the audio? Well, I guess we don't have to worry about that one. To the best of our knowledge, our work is the first to combine audio and facial features for achieving an optimal nonlinear temporal alignment with facial performance videos. Once the synchronization has occurred, the system enables a director to control the performance by choosing the desired facial expressions and timing from either video, which are then blended together using facial landmarks, optical flow, and compositioning. To test the system, actors perform several lines of dialogue, repeating the performances to convey different emotions, happiness, sadness, excitement, fear, anger. The line readings were then captured in HD resolution using standard compact cameras, and the researchers were able to synchronize the videos in real time and automatically on a standard desktop computer. So you don't even need a supercomputer to do this shit. Imagine a hacker getting their hands on some of your images and being able to like blend it and then making it say things using that puppeteer software. This is just frightening, guys. You won't be able to trust anything. You're going to have like secret, super secret handshakes and super secret keywords to make sure it's the person that you thought it was. And this is the land of make-believe turned upside down on its head. And we already can't believe anything that we're told, but now we're not going to be able to believe anything we see. The researchers showed additional results of Face Director from different applications, generation of multiple performances from a sparse set of input video, takes in the context of nonlinear video storytelling, script correction and editing, and voice exchange between emotions, for example, to create an entertaining performance with a sad voice over a happy face. Well, glad we can do amusing things like that as well. But it gets even better. And this is how we're going to spin this as the coolest technology on earth to the dumb end user. Now, the dumb end user isn't going to get their hands on anything like this right away, but they are going to probably get one of these for Christmas. They now have introduced, and this came out actually in August. I had this queued up one day, and we just never got to it. So when I saw those other two stories yesterday, it reminded me of this one, and I found it. We all know, like with police brutality, one of the big pushes to supposedly slow down police brutality was to have the police put on personal body cameras. And Obama inked some executive order to make all kinds of money available to buy body cameras. And, of course, now they're all cashing in on that. Yep. But how convenient it is that every time that there's some sort of shooting or whatever, oh, it malfunctioned. Oh, it got stepped on. And, I mean, there have been quite a few. Pigmine has some good videos that they capture a lot of things on body or dash cam. But what if we had something like this? Something like this for the police, so it doesn't make such a huge amount of video that has to be gone through, and everything will just be A-okay. We'll check it out. Title of the story, this self-editing action camera, yes, I said it, self-editing, is the future of home video. Oh, yay. I don't even need to know how to edit videos or make jack shit anymore. Don't worry about it. Your AI camera's going to do it for you. All right. The great thing about go anywhere, do anything cameras like the GoPro is that they capture everything. The bad thing about go anywhere, do anything cameras like the GoPro is that they capture everything. that always on, always recording feature forces you to edit and view hours upon hours of B-roll just to get the highlights of that awesome 720 backside grab you did on the half pipe. I mean, come on. Let's appeal to the lazy-ass Americans who can't do anything for themselves anymore. And this is just unreal. So you know what? Even though you've been recording everything all day, we know most of it's boring. Let's cut to the chase. Enter Grava. G-R-A-A-V-A is the name of the startup. A young startup with an artificially intelligent action camera that promises to do all your editing for you. Now, guys. Again, we are taking another baby step toward augmented reality, and this is the future implanted personal digital assistant that's saving your important memories for you. I already see where this technology is going. The idea is that you'll shoot all your video, and then you'll trust the camera to save the best bits. The Grava camera, just $249 during pre-order, is a keychain-sized gadget that looks like a Pico projector in a white, black, or orange plastic shell, and it clips onto your helmet, your handlebars, or wherever, yes, or soon-to-be dash cam, and records everything in your direct line of vision. I'm going to look later and see whether or not they've signed up any police agencies for the self-editing intelligent camera. It shoots 1080p at 30 frames per second or 720p at 60 frames if you wanted to do some slow-mo. And as it's filming, Grava gathers data from its accelerometer, gyroscope, light sensor, GPS, and other sensors. And I'm trying to remember, yesterday I saw another story on this. There's some pretty psycho sensors in this thing, like that are taking readings around you and co-location. I don't know. We'll maybe bring up some more on this tomorrow. I want to dig into this more. It's accelerometer, gyroscope, light sensor, GPS, and other sensors. That info, a landmark identified via GPS or quickening heart rate picked up by your Apple Watch. Yeah, that was one of them. It actually is one of the things that it's looking at is all of the environmental characteristics that are going on at that moment that you're filming. So if it sees your gyroscope is making you go upside down and it's getting, because it's connected via Bluetooth to your Apple Watch, and your Apple Watch is saying that your heart rate has just gone up, that camera takes those two cues and right off the bat determines that that is an important moment for it to make sure it keeps and doesn't delete, because it was exciting to you with your blood pressure going up or your heart rate. So anyway, back here, as it's filming, Grava gathers data from its accelerometer, gyroscope, light sensor, GPS, and other sensors, and that info, a landmark identified via GPS or quickened heart rate picked up by your Apple Watch, tips Grava off to the exciting moments that are buried in your footage. The Grava founders reason that certain sensory spikes like a savory smell or an unusual sight can indicate moments where our brain would normally catalog them. The camera does the same thing. A spike in your heart rate or speed, for example, might indicate a wicked descent on a trail, and the camera uses those variations from the norm to rate events in the footage and in your life. You can also say Grava to the camera if you want to flag a moment that it might not otherwise catch. Once the footage is uploaded to the cloud, Grava uses that data to auto-edit your day's highlight reel to whatever length you specify. Suddenly, 3 hours of your largely lackadaisical fishing trip becomes 10 minutes of cannonballs and fishes flopping on the deck. With Grava, says founder Bruno Gregory, we emulate the way the human memory works. This is really nuts. So, you know, we find out that our attention span has been relegated to that of a freaking goldfish at 8 or 9 seconds or whatever it was because of our digital phones. And it's caused us to lose our ability to remember things because information is available at the tip of your finger on the internet. What is this going to do now when you can walk around with a Gravicam on 24/7 recording every minute of your day? And then have it cut it down to 10 minutes of highlights that you can then store in the cloud somewhere. This is really whacked. Our memories and emotions aren't quite as simplistic as, quote, that pretzel vendor smelled amazing. I'll remember him later. Well, good thing. So Grava does require a bit of babysitting during the editing process. A simple drag and drop editing bar lets you delete bits that weren't so sensational and add back moments that felt significant. So good thing you can at least don't have to set it on autopilot, but I bet you could. Gregory says that over time, Grava software uses another machine learning algorithm to take stock of the kinds of footage that you like. So then next time it can cater its editing choices to what you specifically find interesting. Grava does have limitations. For one, the battery lasts only about 3 hours. It also doesn't have emotions. Well, good thing. And no algorithm or amount of data can replicate our sentimental memory. But that might also be okay. If Grava's intelligent software works as described, we could have a new subcategory of home video on our hands. One that is less extreme than your typical skateboarding, surfing, and rappelling GoPro footage and requires, and sorry, easier to refine than an Instagram video, which requires lots of inputs and tweaks on a tiny screen. And you can imagine a designer easily compiling footage of a new product prototype to post on Kickstarter, or a parent's delight at seeing their daughter's soccer tournament auto-edited to stellar plays and goals. These things are useful, and it's less like your memory and more like a theatrical trailer of your life. Dun, dun, dun. And see, what's so important about this and putting all these important moments from your life up into the cloud is when we move towards some of the future things that they are looking to do, like upload yourself to the machine and then be able to restore memories or whatever. 3D holographic images of people after they're gone. Guys, this is how they're going to start collecting that information. They want you to get used to bleeding these two realities and fictions together. Make it real. Everything digital is real. Look at how great it is. All right, and that's going to lead us to our last story here. I just had to reload it. I don't know. Chrome is acting just so bizarre lately. Hold on. It's going to reload again because I reloaded it and then it appeared. But Chrome just takes so long to even load a page. Come on. Let's go. It's not going. I'm going to have to sing. We'll do a Johnny Cash. All right. Here we go. This is out of Forbes. A series surprised me because I wasn't expecting to see something like this out of Forbes. A series of unfortunate tech predictions, artificial intelligence, and the Internet of Things are inseparable. Well, thanks, Forbes. I guess you've been listening to the show for quite a while because we've been talking about that. It comes down to having control of every cell in your body and every cell in every living creature here at some point in the future, they will all be a part of the Internet of Things. And of course, there's a picture that starts out the article with a very digital looking head with lots of digital numbers coming out of it. Bzzz. We've been thinking about the Internet of Things all wrong. Well, I guess Forbes has. They start giving some bullet points. So bullet point number one, big data analytics for the Internet of Things software revenue will experience strong growth, reaching $81 billion by 2022, says Strategy Analytics. And I bet you that was one of the Gartner quadrants. Smart cities will use 1.6 billion connected things in 2016, says who? Oh, Gartner. Yes, see, I knew they'd be in here somewhere. Gartner's always in here. By 2025, the Internet of Things will be a $1.6 trillion opportunity in healthcare alone, says McKinsey. 50 billion plus connected devices will exist by 2020, says Cisco. Wow, it's just so amazing. Aren't these all the things we've been talking about here? Data captured by Internet of Things connected devices will top 1.6 zettabytes. Zetta, like beyond. I think zetta may even be beyond peta in 2020, says ABI Research. And the last bullet. There are 10 major factions fighting to become the interoperable standard for the Internet of Things. And that's always with a new technology. Even when I remember we went from 33.6 to 56K modems, if you guys remember that, like back in the old days, there were all these competing 56K standards out there. Then they all had to decide on one because they didn't interoperate, and that's pretty important. Usually they get the National Institute for Standards involved, good old NIST, and they set a standard for everyone to follow. All right, numbers, numbers, numbers. If the predictions are to be believed, there is no way that current analytical solutions will be able to manage that level of information across that size of collected landscape. And guys, this is where I'm telling you, the cash cow right now, this is the edge of technology again, riding that wave, and this is the cash cow. Of course, no singular platform needs to pull all this information together, but all solutions in the immediate future will require artificial intelligence capabilities, which means that SAP, Oracle, IBM, and Cisco, and all the rest who have analytics platform play will have to invest in AI research, which will explain like Toyota's $1 billion investment, I'm sure. They'll need to invest in AI research, acquire, and finally emerge with solutions based on methods beyond machine learning or risk being left behind. But these dinosaurs are being left behind in the dust already, led by consumer-led companies such as Apple, Google, and Facebook. It'll be one of these or another with a foothold in the consumer world where the real AI breakthrough will emerge, not academia or sciences. Well, I mean, remember, Google's got Kurzweil and DARPA on his side. I don't know, man. They're all working on some pretty crazy stuff. Facebook announced recently that its Parse project, its major push to the Internet of Things race, has been expanded with new SDKs for silicon vendors like Broadcom, Intel, Texas Instruments, and Atmel. So they're going to allow them to build in some sort of, I don't know, Broadcom, Intel, Texas Instruments. I don't know Amtel, but Broadcom, Intel, and Texas Instruments all make processors, so they're probably building in some sort of connectivity with an SDK, software development kit. With Facebook intending to funnel the interaction of data between devices and devices and people, this expands the amount of data available for any AI project to use in understanding what? Oh, behavioral patterns. Yes, that's what they're doing. See, once they understand all your behavioral patterns, then they can do the pre-crime, right? We've talked about that. When you start deviating from your daily behavior, that means you're trying to hide something or you got something else going on that's not typical. And then ultimately, govern and control the Internet of Things. While the likes of Cisco, Samsung, talked about them, IBM, Honeywell. Honeywell was all about the smart heating and cooling. And Intel, all in a fight. Actually, Honeywell does smart buildings. All in a fight to own the rights for interoperability standards. Companies like Facebook are quietly increasing their capabilities in other directions toward a future understood and driven by artificial intelligence. And if this sounds vaguely familiar, it's because right now all efforts are pointing toward machine learning and algorithms as the goal for analytics. And analytics is where your money is. That's where you can actually pull meaningful information out of the data that's collected. It says, take a definition and turn from Wikipedia. Machine learning is defined as a subfield of computer science and artificial intelligence that deals with the construction and the study of systems that can learn from data rather than follow only explicitly programmed instructions. And remember, they're gonna teach the machines to say no. So it gets even more dangerous. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next. And then tonight we have all kinds of live radio, 7 p.m. Eastern. It starts with Ron and Game On at 8, our interesting times. This week with Tim Kelly at 9, live Michael and Nick on Primer Time. 10 o'clock, Geoengineering Watch with Dane and Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson at 11. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Tuesday.